Good morning. This is Emily Austin for Faithfully Memphis, a weekly radio show and podcast from the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. Each week, we have the opportunity to talk with interesting people who are doing amazing things in their local communities and learn a little bit how their faith is informing their work and their lives and the communities of people that they serve. And today on the show, I am delighted to have on Stacy Freeman from Bethel University and Dr. Pete Getke from Memphis Theological Seminary. And a little bit later in the show, I'm going to be talking to them about the work that their respective universities are doing in the realm of global studies at Bethel University, and how that work is just really reaching a lot of people and doing some amazing things, not just here in Tennessee and Shelby County, but all over the world. But first, I am going to tell you a little bit about our saint of the day. Today in our wonderful Episcopal Church calendar, we are commemorating the feast of Columba of Iona, otherwise known as Saint Columba. Those who are listening here locally in Memphis, well, that name might sound familiar because it is Saint Columba is actually the namesake of the Episcopal Camp and Conference Center here in Shelby County. It's run by the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. Right now, there are lots of young people who are taking part in Camp Able, and later this summer, Mud Camp. My own nine-year-old, she is not 9 years old anymore. My own 10-year-old is going to be visiting Mud Camp a little bit later this summer. It's always an amazing time for the kids who get to get muddy and have fun there. But who was Saint Columba? Honestly, the first time I heard about Saint Columba outside of the context of Memphis and just the campground that's right here in Memphis, I was listening to a podcast. I do listen to a lot of podcasts, and one of my favorite podcasts, and I feel kind of embarrassed but not really saying this, is a paranormal podcast, and they were talking about the Loch Ness Monster, and it kind of, I fell out of my seat a little bit when they said that that there is a St. Columba or Columba of Iona connection to the Loch Ness Monster. So I was kind of taken aback by that. I did not know that there was this connection, but yeah, there is. And I'll tell you a little bit about that later. But Columba of Iona was born in what they believe to be a December 7th of the year 521. It always kind of jars me a little bit when I hear when you just hear 521 or a year that only had three digits to it, I'm like, how's that possible? It's so long ago. He died in 597, and he is mostly known for spreading Christianity into what is modern day Scotland, primarily in the lands of the Picts and the, y'all are going to have to forgive me for my butchering of this. Some of these Gaelic names get me. Dalriada, sounds like it's Dalriada. And he's known for founding an abbey on Iona. He is the patron saint of Derry. He's also he's the patron saint of Ireland, Scotland, poets, lots of other stuff. So in his influence on early Celtic Christianity is one of the biggest things that he's known for. And Celtic Christianity is pretty dissimilar from what we think of as Roman Christianity, because the basic unit was the monastery, and of whom the abbot was the controlling person. And unlike continental Christianity at the time, which was Roman based, which was based around a diocese or the bishop. And there were bishops, but there were not as powerful as the abbots. And each monastery was independent and had strong local ties. There was a huge emphasis on local initiative, in that if you want something done in your community, you can just go out and do it. So there was a lot of autonomy to the different monasteries. He was born in Ireland, and it was in a pretty affluent family. Pretty much he, from some of the sources that I looked at, he was actually in line possibly to be the eventual king of Ireland. He was in that line, but he opted for a monastic religious life instead. There's a little bit of, this is kind of open to interpretation, and different historians will say different things, but it's set, the way that I'm interpreting it is that there was a conflict about midway through his life, probably when he was 30 or 40 years old, when he was copying the Psalter. And back then, you know, you have to think about these religious texts as that they are extremely proprietary. Most people cannot read them. And so if you were making a copy of a Psalter, it was kind of a no-no. And so he studied under Finian and got into trouble for copying the Psalter that Finian had in his possession. And him doing this without his permission led to him almost being excommunicated, because him doing what sounds a little bit to me like plagiarism eventually led through a series of events that created a conflict where, and there's a lot of nuance to this, but there's up to 3,000 people died as a result of him doing this, like copying the Psalter. And eventually the trial where he went to trial was thrown out, but he still felt really guilty about what he had done and all the death that he had caused. And according to some sources and some historians, they interpreted it as, okay, well, he left Ireland at that time to go to Scotland to save as many lives as he had caused the death of. I don't know if that's true, but it's an interesting interpretation of the events of his life. So he had a spiritual advisor, a monk in the wilderness, or a hermit in the wilderness, who advised him to leave Ireland and bring the same number of souls to Christ as he had caused to die, which was up into the thousands. So by 563, he goes to Scotland and is given the Isle of Iona from his kinsmen. Again, he was in a fairly well-stationed place in his life where he could just be given an island be given the opportunity to convert the people who were there. And it's during this time that the story of St. Columba and the monster kind of rises up. Apparently, the king of Iona, or one of the Pictish rulers, which the Picts were a tribe of Celtic people who populated Scotland at the time, one of the Pictish rulers called to Columba and said that there has been this beast that was going around and killing people in the land. And definitely, if you need something to kind of just if you want to have some fun on Google, Google St. Columba Monster, because there are some really interesting pictures of what this monster could have looked like. I feel like a lot of these medieval creatures are basically just amalgams of different like animal parts mushed together. So that's what this monster was allegedly looking like. And basically Columba, you know, in the really terse language that typically describes these medieval events, Columba came in, banished the animal into the River Ness, which feeds into Loch Ness. And to this day, that is apparently where the story of, or the origin story of the Loch Ness Monster. Take it for what it is. But, you know, aside from all of the, you know, kind of fun things that we can learn about St. Columba, today we venerate him because the abbey in Iona, where that he founded, is home to the Iona Community, which is an ecumenical retreat center that has shaped the spirituality of many Christians since it was founded in 1938. And it continues as an important place of pilgrimage and spiritual renewal to this day. He was able to, at the time that he was in Scotland, there were lots of different iterations of Christianity, because he certainly was not the first missionary to Scotland. If you were not on for communities that were not already on a coastline, the interpretation of Christianity was often not similar to other iterations of it within the country or within the Scottish region. And Columba was remembered for sort of bringing a little bit more cohesion and unity to the Christian thought in that country. So today we remember him, and the prayer that we find in the Anglican Cycle of Prayer for Columba of Iona is, O God, who by the preaching of your servant Columba caused the light of the gospel to shine in Scotland, grant, we pray, that remembering his life and labors, we may follow the example of his zeal and patience through Jesus Christ our Lord, who lives and reigns with you in the Holy Spirit, one God, forever and ever. Thank you so much. We're back from break. And during the break, Dr. Peter Getke and I were kind of chatting a little bit about St. Columba. And before we jump into like the main topic of conversation, which is the Global Studies program at Bethel University, I would like to put Dr. Getke on the spot and share with you a little bit of a critique of what I was sharing with him, is that when I was doing my research on St. Columba, as a communicator and as a writer, when I first uncovered these little historical bits about how there was possibly some plagiarism allegations against St. Columba, and that kind of turned me off of him, because, you know, I'm all about transparency. Sometimes I read about saints and I'm just like, I don't know about you. But Dr. Getty, share with me what you just share with the audience what you just shared with me off air.
Well, you indicated, as you were telling the history, about how manuscripts were limited, and they were in fact a kind of source of wealth and prestige. So what Columba was doing in copying those manuscripts was trying to make them, was to disperse them, to make them more available to other people. And so in that sense, he was kind of undercutting the status quo. No, and so no wonder he got into trouble, because he was kind of what we might say today, liberating those texts so that other people could have access to them as well. And of course, that fits well with his his own missionary impetus that these are texts not to be hoarded, but to be shared in a broader community. And of course, in his age, the sort of sense of like intellectual property belonging to an individual wasn't as strong as it is today. It was more that what was there intellectually was really came out of the community and was for the well-being of the community. And that's what he was trying to do. So he's more of a liberationist than a plagiarist.
And it's because of you sharing that, that my opinion is changing. That's what I love about this show, is that we always have amazing people on who can kind of set the record straight and show us how, you know, it, a lot of times things are up to interpretation. And with that, I'm delighted to have on today, Faithfully Memphis, Stacy Freeman from Bethel University and Dr. Peter Getke from Memphis Theological Seminary. Both of their universities where they teach are part of the Cumberland Presbyterian tradition. And within recent time, they have been collaborating for a global studies program at Bethel University. So, but first, before we jump in to this program that y'all are collaborating on, I wanted to invite you both to share a little bit about your life, your faith journey. What were the events of your life that kind of got you where we are today? Stacy, do you want to go first? Tell a little bit about yourself and your journey.
Of course. First of all, thank you for having me on the show this morning. I'm delighted to be here. I am Stacy Freeman. I've been teaching sociology at Bethel University since 2005. Around 2006 or 2007, I started working with a student group there, focused primarily on local volunteer work. In fact, I think the furthest we got from home those first couple of years we were in action was to Manna House in Memphis, Tennessee, which with you're familiar. However, that changed when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. Probably a year or 18 months after that disaster, I got a group together and we traveled to New Orleans to help with cleanup. And so what began as a local initiative at the Humane Society or Habitat for Humanity, and then branched out to New Orleans, by 2011 became a global studies program at Bethel, which I said all that to say this is something I truly believe I was born to do. As a child, I would pretend at my grandmother's house to be a teacher, and I would use her National Geographic magazines as my textbooks.
I love that.
I do too. And what is also interesting about that, looking back, is that at the same time I was attending a missionary Baptist church with my other set of grandparents. And so I was hearing about missionaries working in the field, helping people in the places that I was learning about in my grandmother's National Geographic magazines. Yeah. And so I think just very early on, it was somehow ingrained in me to be a teacher and a traveler and a helper. And here we are
teacher,
today.
Traveler, helper. I love that.
Yeah, talking about global studies. and I still use National Geographic to teach my classes.
I mean, it's you can't do better. And you're in McKenzie, Tennessee, right?
Yes, that's correct. I have lived in Dresden, Tennessee my entire life. But it's a place I live, but that I leave often. I love to travel. Yeah. My feet are itchy.
Yeah.
Yes. So that in a nutshell is how I got here.
Dr. Getke?
A short version is that, like Stacy, I've been a teacher for a long time and got into that pretty early in my life, but always related to teaching is learning. And my own faith journey has really been through kind of the Catholic upbringing that I had. I was educated in Catholic schools, grade school, high school, college, and was deeply influenced by the Sisters of St. Francis, who taught in the grade school and high school. And then when I went to St. John's University in Minnesota by the Benedictine monks, one of the reasons I knew a little bit about Columba is because I was a Benedictine monk for 3 years. And that's been an important part of my faith journey. Even though I left the monastery a long time ago, the monastery never left me. So I've been interested in alternative Christian communities, or sometimes called intentional Christian communities. And so I got connected with a place called the Open Door Community that was then in Atlanta, but now in Baltimore, which they describe themselves as a Catholic Presbyterian Catholic worker house, which is probably a contradiction in terms, but they made it work. It worked with people on the streets, offering a place to stay, soup and showers and just hospitality in general. And they also worked with people on death row, and worked to abolish the death penalty. And I got connected with them when I was doing my theological studies at the Candler School of Theology at Emory, and then the graduate school at Emory. And so I've always had this interest in the question of so what in relationship to Christian theology. We believe this, all right? What difference does it make? So not surprisingly, my PhD is in Christian ethics, which really tries to answer that so what question. And in my teaching and scholarship, that's really my focus. And in order to stay real about that, it's one of the founders of Manna House here in Memphis that works with people on the streets and offers hospitality. And in fact, that's where my wife Kathleen is this morning while I'm on the air. So my faith journey is really tied into kind of alternative Christian community connected with work with people on the margins and how those two need to continually intersect. And so my current work at Memphis Theological Seminary as the academic dean there, that's what I'm trying to help the seminary keep at the forefront, is that theological education and preparation for ministry should always keep us connected with people who are hurting and vulnerable, so that we can be a compassionate resource for them, but also to be in compassionate solidarity with them as we try to seek ways in which we can make our lives as human beings and indeed the whole creation better. So that's me in a nutshell.
Well, I'm looking down at my notes and I have just in what you both have shared so far, I wish that we had more than an hour to talk, because there's just so much to dig into. But can you, so one of the connective tissues between Bethel University and Memphis Theological Seminary is this Cumberland Presbyterian background and foundation. Can y'all talk a little bit about the Cumberland Presbyterian Church and how the Center for Global Studies is sort of a natural fit denominationally, or interpret that question however you like. Tell me all the things.
Well, I'll begin. So Memphis Theological Seminary is an ecumenical mission of the Cumberland Presbyterian Church. That's how we're officially described. And that says a lot about the Cumberland Presbyterian Church, that they have a seminary that exists to not only educate Cumberland Presbyterians for the ministry, but whosoever else shall come. So we have well over 25 different Christian denominations represented among our students. And in that, we're a fairly unique place. Our student body is very diverse, large African-American presence. We're actually African-American majority seminary now, with about 60% African-American enrollment. We've always had women students. And about half of our students are women. Cumberland Presbyterian Church was the first major Protestant denomination in the United States to ordain a woman. Louisa Woseley, back in 1889, was a Cumberland Presbyterian. She was ordained in the Cumberland Presbyterian Church. And this really goes back into the roots of the Cumberland Presbyterian Church, that emerged out of what was called the Great Awakening in the early 1800s on the frontier of the United States. And there were a group of pastors who thought that this Great Awakening, this movement of the Holy Spirit, should loosen things up a bit within the church. And in particular, they were concerned about ordination requirements, interestingly enough. Kind of the old side said that folks had to go back east to get theological education, and they needed to learn Greek and Hebrew and be steeped in the classics. And these guys said, you know, that's all good and well, but the Spirit's moving on the frontier, and we need to ordain people now to serve people in these churches that are popping up all over the place. Mm-hmm. So they had that disagreement, and then there was something called the Westminster Confession. And in particular, the kind of emphasis within that confession on predestination within Calvinism, they did not like that. There were more what's called Arminian, which makes them more Methodist or even Episcopalian. And so they said that people could dissent from the Westminster Confession, which was scandalous. So those folks eventually got kicked out of the Presbyterian Church, and they ended up forming this new denomination, which became the Cumberland Presbyterian Church. So there's always been this kind of liberatory but biblically based liberation with this tradition of the CP Church, Cumberland Presbyterian Church. So that carries on at Memphis Theological Seminary, and I think with what Global Studies does at Bethel University. So I'm teeing you up, Stacy.
Thank you. Yes. No, there are so many ways I think that Global Studies supports the Cumberland Presbyterian theology and the mission of both Memphis Theological Seminary and Bethel University. You know, as Christians, I think we're stakeholders in the world's very complex problems. And I think we have a moral obligation to understand what those problems are as Christians, and to understand that we have a role to play in solving them. And so what I have always hoped for Global Studies is that it would provide a vehicle for our students at Bethel and now our students at MTS to participate in that process. And so in dreaming of that, what I've tried to craft or create in the Global Studies program is an educational experience as much as a travel experience. I don't really see a separation between the two, because I think that there's no better education than travel. But so what that has meant for our program and our efforts to support the CP Church and both of our educational institutions is that we've developed a course that actually lasts about 5 weeks. That's for the most part required for our travelers to enroll in. And they learn several interesting things in that course. One, they learn the definition of global citizenship and why it's important that we have an understanding of our place in the world and all the problems in it and all the ways that we can contribute to solutions. We learn about the history and the culture of the place we're going to visit and volunteer. We learn about our nonprofit partners, which are increasingly becoming Cumberland Presbyterian missionaries. We're partnering more and more with the Cumberland Presbyterian Church. We learn about UN Sustainable Development Goals and what it means to travel sustainably. And so students or participants go into the travel experience understanding more about the country and the culture that they're going to visit, as well as the purpose of our visit. And we've added a component in recent years. It's a unit on Christianity and global citizenship, so that they understand, you know, why and how this is important to their Christian faith. And so what it turns out to be then is a six week long effort to be the hands and feet of Jesus and to serve, as Pete said, the most marginalized communities, not just in McKinsey, not just in Memphis, but in other corners of the world. And at the deepest root of that, the goal has always been to create more opportunities to love one another. I've always believed that the more we get out there and travel and see the world, the friendlier we are to it, and the less likely we are to offend against it. And so that in my mind and the creation of the entire program, the heart and root of it was to love one another more and better. And I think that is at the heart of the Cumberland Presbyterian tradition.
Now, y'all recently took a trip, I guess, to Brazil. Am I right in remembering that?
We've been in Colombia.
Colombia.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Which is home to one of our sister schools. So a lot of folks don't know that we have, that the Cumberland Presbyterian Church has several schools that it supports or is affiliated with. There's Bethel University, where I teach. There's Memphis Theological Seminary. There's an all-girls school in Japan, a university there in Japan. Uh-huh. And then we have a pre-K through high school in Cali, Colombia. And Pete was talking about women and the role that they have played in the Cumberland Presbyterian Church. It was actually two young women, two female missionaries that 100 years ago nearly set sail from the USA to Colombia to start this little school, which was the first in Colombia, or in, at least in Cali, to allow children of color, of different races and ethnicities, to attend and learn in their classrooms. So that's just another example of how the Cumberland Presbyterian Church has worked elsewhere in much the same fashion that it's worked here in McKenzie and in Memphis.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about what you hope for students who are going through this program? Like, what is the, I mean, there are so many different motivating factors for, you know, when we're students and we're wanting to get credentialed, but as a teacher, what do you hope to see? What's the fruit that you hope that the program is bearing?
You know, I hate to say at a time of so much divisiveness, because I think, you know, our history is full of divisiveness. But I think that my overarching hope is that by traveling and crossing quote unquote boundaries, that what we'll realize is that there truly is no divisiveness. I mean, we're all children of God. There is one race of people. It is the human race. And I think the more familiarity we can bring to that, the more experiences we can have with one another, the more likely that is to happen. And so I would think that, you know, this is sort of a beauty pageant contestant sort of answer, but, you know, I think that to find peace, you know, we have to overcome fear. And I think a lot of what we're afraid of is the unknown. And so the more opportunities that I can provide my students to get to know people and other places, the closer we come to a better world, I think.
Yeah. And as someone who teaches sociology, that's something that you can actually really, really speak to.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So the global studies course that I teach is very, very much seeped in sociological concepts and theories, very much.
Well, let me ask you another question. You know, I feel like often, you know, I'm a person who loves to learn. I love to travel. I love to do all of, like, I just like to embrace the world and learn more about it. But, you know, I'm not at a point in my life right now where I'm in school, at least in a formal context. And, you know, but I can travel. You know, I knock on wood, we're getting to a place in this I hesitate to say post-pandemic world. We are not post-pandemic, or we'll probably ever be. We'll be in an endemic world. What is it about travel, and it's accessible to everybody to some extent, even if that travel is across our city or across our state? Mm-hmm. What are some of the lessons that you both have sort of gleaned from your own travels and you think that some of our listeners might be able to take with them, even if they can't be in school in a program like this?
Right. Yeah. I don't think you have to travel to the other side of the world. You don't have to travel to Colombia or to Costa Rica or Ecuador to learn from the experience. In fact, I think there are all kinds of things that we can do right here at home to broaden our horizons and to learn to appreciate other cultures. And I think that's one thing that the pandemic, I mean, you know, we talk about the pandemic and the silver linings of the pandemic is that it made it clear that virtual classes and virtual travel, virtual opportunities, virtual cooking lessons from around the world, virtual dance lessons, things like that. There are ways that we can reach out into the world to learn more about it without actually having to get on a plane. And so I've been making a more concerted effort at Bethel through the Global Studies program to provide those kinds of opportunities. You know, I do live in an area here in Northwest Tennessee where our high schools are Title I, which means underfunded and full of kids who can't afford to pay full price for their school lunch. And so there are a lot of those students that would love to travel to Columbia to learn more about the work the Cumberland Presbyterian Church is doing there, but can't afford to go. And so one of the things that we've been doing, one of the initiatives I've been working on is creating virtual travel opportunities where, in fact, I've created a whole course and received a grant from National Geographic to do that. Yeah. Talk about coming.
National Geographic, just, I feel like it, next time you write a book, you need to definitely give them a shout out in the dedication.
Yeah, they actually gave me a grant to create a virtual global service learning and citizenship course to be offered to students who just can't, for whatever reason, get on a plane right now, whether it's due to a pandemic or, you know, financial constraints. So just knowing that you don't have to travel to become a better global citizen, I think it would be one thing that I've learned as a result of my work in global studies. And thanks to the pandemic, honestly, that really pushed me in that direction and for the better. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah. Dr. Gecki.
And I would connect the global studies to the reality of global Christianity. We tend to be so U.S.-centric that we forget that the majority of Christians are not in North America and Europe. They're in the southern part of the hemisphere, right, in Africa and Latin America and India and Asia. So it's really important for seminary students who are preparing to do ministry, to get out of that U.S.-centric mentality and realize that the church is so much bigger than the United States, and the kind of the issues that we're confronting internally, important as those are, to see the global connections and to see how the U.S. Distorts things, that's putting it kind of mildly, within a number of nations around the world, and how the U.S. as an imperial power is affecting people all around the world. And then how is Christianity as a global movement to counteract the bad aspects of that imperialism? So for our students, it's really important to get that broader global understanding of life and of the place of Christianity within that global life. And so it really was a kind of graced moment when we were having conversations about how could Bethel University and Memphis Theological Seminary partner in a variety of ways. And Stacy was in on that conversation and I was in on it. And I said, well, why don't our students get involved with the Global Studies program and go along with that? Because we didn't have any global studies as a seminary. We didn't have any opportunities for our students to go to other countries on a regular basis. So out of that kind of conversation came the partnership, which has been very fruitful, and it's in its earliest stages. So we don't have a lot of students yet jumping at this opportunity, but at least the opportunity is there now. And as students become more and more familiar with it, there'll be increased participation as well.
Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, just as I reflect on what you're sharing and how I was, you know, doing my own little study of St. Columba, and one of the notes that kind of jumped out at me while I was learning more about it is that there is such, often our different Christian interpretations are, not often, it just by nature of the fact that we are communities who are impacted by an outside culture and the culture of where we are. There are different, Celtic Christianity at the time of Columba, very, very different from Roman Christianity. So I guess that prompts my question, how as Christians, when we explore the world, how do we temper it so that it is not exploitative and it's not something that, like you said, Dr. Gitke, we have to be very aware of the fact that there is an imperialist notation as, white American Christians. We don't really have a good track record of going into places and not whitewashing everything. How can we shape that as Christians as we enter the world? And we want to share our faith, but we also want to do that with complete love and not discounting where others are coming from.
Well, to address that from my side of things, that's actually one of the purposes that the course serves. And I specifically address a lot of what you just inquired about in this section or unit on what it means to be a global citizen and how that is a reflection of our Christian faith. And rule number one is that we are not going to save anyone's day. We are not the great white hope galloping in with answers to anyone's questions or problems. We enter into communities and we participate. We always volunteer. Everywhere we go, we volunteer. That's a part of how we have created like a sustainable, what we would think of as a sustainable program. There are initiatives and efforts that we're undertaking to make sure that we're giving as much as we're getting from these communities. And so we always volunteer and we always partner with a nonprofit organization or with the Cumberland Presbyterian Church. And their projects are always in support of UN Sustainable Development Goals. So working on sustainable projects that we're assigned is key. So we don't go in and say, let us help you with X, Y, or Z. Yeah. We say, what do you need help with? Put us to work. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one thing that we do to sort of, mitigate that whole whitewashing of the experience for our students. And there are some other things that we do as well to make sure that we're, like I said, adding as much to the community as we're getting from it. One is that we're very much an off the beaten path program. Mm-hmm. So I'm not traveling with students from postcard to postcard to postcard when we travel. Yeah, we're getting in there with real people in real communities. We're eating in local restaurants. I'm hiring local guides. I hire local interpreters. We attend local church services. We volunteer in local schools with local nonprofits. Yeah. So we're doing as much as we can to fill up the community, right?
Yeah. You're adding to the community rather than just coming in with your own. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And all of that is clearly explained in the course, again, which is so important that everybody enrolls in the course, at least as an auditor, to go into the experience having this foundation.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask about that. Is it open to be audited? Like, so you don't have to be a degree seeking student to go through it.
Right. That's correct. And it's entirely housed online. So you don't have to show up in McKinsey. You just show up in Google Classroom and you can glean the content from that online platform. Yeah. And so, yes, it's open to auditors.
Wow. And how can people find out more about that? Is it on y'all's website?
Yes, Bethel University's website has a page dedicated to global studies, so you can find out general details there. And then, of course, by contacting me via email is always a good option.
Good deal. Well, I'll make sure that folks who are listening to the podcast, you can look in the show notes for all of that information to get in touch with Stacey Freeman if you want to learn more or if you want to get involved.
Right. And that's one thing I would like to say is that these opportunities are not exclusive to Bethel and MTS students. We do travel with faculty, staff, alumni, family, friends. And so over the years, actually, what we've seen or the way that we've seen the program growing is into the community, which is exciting. So a program that started at Bethel University with a few students who probably volunteered with me first at Manor House has grown into a program that now includes high school students, which is really unique. We offer college credit for high school students to participate in our programs. So high school juniors, if you have any high school juniors out there listening to the program this morning, you need to contact me because it is a one-stop shop for college applications. I mean, you get a study abroad experience, international volunteer experience, college credit, and then our participants are eligible for the President's Volunteer Service Award. There's a lot of reward for student participants for sure. And then we have lots of people just from the general community who've started traveling with us. And so we're excited about the way the program is growing and appreciate you giving us an opportunity to share it with Memphis.
My absolute pleasure. Well, what the last question and the way that we always end these our conversations on Faithfully Memphis is with the question, what's giving you hope? You know, like we've alluded to, we're living in, you know, this is a time. We're living in a time.
Yeah, we are living in a time.
What's giving you both hope?
Oh, gosh. I think for me, I mean, there are so many things that give me hope, but the growth of the program is certainly a source of hopefulness for me. To see the number of young people who are interested in learning about other people and other places and who are interested in not only learning about them, but like open to loving them and the amount of appreciation for diversity I see among our young people. You know, sometimes people say kids these days, and I agree, kids these days, but gosh, they're awesome. They're just the young people. The opportunity I have to work with young people through my job at Bethel University, through the dual enrollment program and through global studies, just, it really is a bright spot for me. It makes me really hopeful that everything is going to be okay.
Dr. Getke.
Yeah, it's such a great question. What gives me hope, and broadening that out, what gives us hope as a people? And I think it is these efforts that ordinary people are doing to refuse to go along with the powers of sin and death, to make it into a theological statement. You know, Christians were people of the resurrection. We don't think death has the last word. And so the resurrection of Jesus Christ gives me hope, ultimately. And then I see all sorts of little resurrections going on all the time. I mean, really one of the reasons I wanted our students to be connected with this program at Bethel University is so that they can experience that resurrection in places other than their own experience, that they can see that people around the world are working in the Spirit of God to make human life and the creation better. And that's the vision of biblical justice that was at the heart of the life and teaching of Jesus. And there is this contrary spirit out there that tries to put people to death. I mean, we're still mourning what's happened in Texas and Buffalo, and we can get easily discouraged because politicians are not being very responsive in ways we would want them to be responsive. And so we have to not give in to that power of death. We have to say there is this stronger power, the power of love, the power of life. And it's a God-breathed power. And we can cooperate with that power, that that grace can work within our lives and make our lives and the lives of others closer to the vision of God for human life. And so that's, you know, theologically, I'm grounded in that resurrection reality, and that's what gives me hope.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you both so much for being with me on the show today. I really do appreciate you taking the time, and I am going to definitely put the information about Memphis Theological Seminary and Bethel University's Global Studies program in the show notes. So folks, if you want to learn more, just scroll down and you'll find them. Thank you so much for listening to Faithfully Memphis today. You can listen to past episodes on the WYXR website or on the Faithfully Memphis podcast. We're available on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, all that good stuff. Of course, it's always really, really helpful when folks leave us a review on Apple Music and Apple Podcasts. That will help more people find our show. So please do me a big favor and do that. You can learn more about the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee at edwtn.org, and also finding a church or finding a faith community near you. This is Emily Austin for Faithfully Memphis. Stay safe and stay positive. Thanks, y'all. People